that dynamic is one of the most interesting aspects of what Bitcoin mining can do to the energy market and to the grid. And we see this as a big development in the coming years, not just as the possibility to monetize existing energy sources, but also to create new ones.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Blockware Intelligence Podcast. This week I have on Seb from Blockgreen. Seb, welcome.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Yeah, glad to have you. Let's jump right into it. I want to know, what is your background and how did you get into the Bitcoin mining industry?
Yeah, so I'm actually from Switzerland, so quite remote from a big Bitcoin mining country, but always been very interested in kind of the intersection of finance and technology. I studied finance, started my career in kind of the first fintech accelerator in Europe called Rocket Internet, where we worked mostly on new payment solutions, new solutions for kind of the digital economy. That's where crypto kind of first appeared in my life, especially Bitcoin. And from there, grew a lot of interest in looking at Bitcoin as a new layer to build applications. And then kind of a few years back, the intersection of Bitcoin and energy became such an interesting topic that I decided to start Blockgreen with my co-founder and build this marketplace.
Awesome. Yeah, let's jump into what you guys are building at Blockgreen. What is it? Tell the audience.
I would say in a very simple way, it's a marketplace where you're able to allocate Bitcoin towards certain investment strategies. The first one that we came up with is very much linked to the mining industry. It's a hash rate liquidity solution, which allows miners to sell kind of upfront future production of Bitcoin cash flows at a present value against Bitcoin. And the interest for miners is, of course, to kind of hedge and secure future revenue and receive working capital. And for the buyers of those streams is to say, well, we're actually exposing our current Bitcoin holdings natively to a form of native return, because we discount the cash flow going forward by a certain cost of capital for the miners in order for them to access this liquidity. So that's the product. It comes from the commodities industry. I mean, it happens in a lot of different industries. You could see it as a factoring tool, as a working capital financing solution, or as a form of royalty streaming in other industries as well.
Yeah, let's dive into the hash rate product that you guys have. How does the platform derive a value for the hash rate that the miners are providing?
Yeah, so we built kind of our own view in the beginning. So we are very active in defining where we think kind of the hash rate production to land in 1, 2, 3 months in order to help both the miners and the buyers to kind of price it. The vision for us is really to have a marketplace where there is a bid and ask, where we actually just provide information, research, but where we're not pricing the actual rewards. In the first place, this is a bit difficult because we're building the marketplace, so we have more of an active role here. But we expect down the line that this will be more fluid with a form of kind of order book mechanism where we're just in the middle settling those trades.
Can you go into more detail, I guess, around what exactly happens when a miner goes on your platform? I can envision maybe I have a petahash of hash rate on the platform, or I add it to the platform, and I want to get some working capital out of that hash rate, basically, promising some of my future rewards or my future hash rate. Can you dive into maybe more of the details?
Yeah. So I need to stress first, this is really an institutional product. So we don't work for now with either retail buyers or retail miners or small miners. It's just a requirement for us to, first of all, have counterparties where we think there is sufficient scale and also track record to be offering such a solution. On the buying side, we really don't think that hash rate products really are made for retail. It's much more of an institutional product with a lot of kind of, I would say, education required in order to really grasp the mechanism. Also, we don't have any tokens or anything like that. We are purely based on Bitcoin. So that's something that we think is really triggered to typical institutional buyers of Bitcoin. So that's the first thing. So, but as a miner, what happens, you come to us, you're a mining firm with existing hashing capacity. You're basically looking at receiving liquidity and potentially increasing your fleet or getting working capital financing. So you provide us with information on your sites, on your company. We do run an onboarding of every miner coming on the platform. That onboarding requires financial due diligence and also due diligence on the sites, on the hash rate, and on the energy as well. If that onboarding is successful, that means you've been vetted by us and you can now start offering those trades where you as a miner say, I am selling X amount of petahash for a certain duration. That means that the equivalent amount of rewards that the petahash that you're selling will then be transferred to a third party that is buying those future revenue. We have a mechanism where you can use our algorithm to get a price or understand the value that we expect this petahash or this hashit to have for the set duration. And then you can open an opportunity for others to come and browse and potentially buy. There's a time frame. So let's say for 2 weeks, you're open for investment. You have 2 weeks to close the minimum amount required for this trade to be executed. Now, if you have on the other side those buyers coming with Bitcoin saying, I want to deposit, you know, the amount of Bitcoin that is necessary for me to enter the trade, they will then deposit Bitcoin into a vault. That vault is a multi-sig wallet, which executes the trades between the two sides, meaning the liquidity is deposited. The miner then needs to show hash rate and collateral. That means we need to see that the hash rate is now hashing not for the miner's wallet, but for the wallet where the liquidity is deposited, as well as a certain amount of collateral deposited into a third-party wallet, which acts as a collateral to secure part of the trade. If that happens, there's then basically an exchange. The liquidity that was deposited by the buyers is then sent to the miner, and then for the length of the agreement, all the rewards go back to the buyers.
Yeah, very interesting. It's going to be very interesting, I guess, to see like how the market attempts to price a product like this. I would be very curious to know. I guess kind of going a little bit further, thinking about the mining industry, it's been very difficult for miners to get reasonable financing. And I think that this product like this has the potential to like really allow miners to get reasonably priced working capital or to expand their fleet like you're talking about. Can you just expand on that idea of how maybe past solutions to, you know, that miners have used, maybe like ASIC collateralized loans, may not be the way that miners finance in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. What was offered previously and still is offered makes sense on paper. When you look at mining from a pure commodity perspective, saying, well, like any other commodities business, you have a high need of equipment, CapEx, we can finance those machines. They are typically very stable in price with a certain amortization over like, you know, a decade or so. And then we can expect those assets to produce X amount of resources. With mining, it's fairly different, right? Because on the one end, the collateral that the financiers of the equipment are using is extremely volatile as well on the one end. And the actual volatility of the production asset, which is Bitcoin or produced asset, sorry, Bitcoin is also extremely high, which means that even with high interest rates, like the 20-25% that we've seen a few years back, do not cover sufficiently both the lenders, in a sense that if the collateral goes down 90%, being paid 20% is not attractive enough, I would say. And also subjects the actual miners to a higher default risk, especially in kind of bear cycles, right? Because they have the incentive to simply get rid of the machines that they've acquired at a much higher price than the current price. And so the entire kind of game theory here is not favorable to anyone. So our solution is native. It's very much looking at Bitcoin, at enabling, on one hand, more liquidity and more flexibility for miners, but also enabling Bitcoin holders to get a form of capital market where they can make use of their Bitcoin and, you know, get additional Bitcoin on top of their holdings. Of course, there's a form of credit risk and you need to understand the counterparty. at the same time, you're able to deploy Bitcoin towards the companies and the institutions which are securing the network, which I think is a pretty beautiful achievement here.
Yeah, it's definitely been interesting seeing the ASIC collateralized loan market play out. It made a lot of sense, I guess, on paper, kind of like you said, but as it played out, obviously it didn't work out for a lot of lenders and a lot of borrowers. And I think another like key part of why it didn't work out was, even if the price of the ASICs or the value of the ASICs started falling, like there wasn't really a super quick, easy way to sell the ASICs. So that was another reason where like you couldn't really margin call the borrower, because the borrower can't just like immediately turn his ASICs to cash. Like maybe you could turn hash rate or Bitcoin to cash.
Right. And in a falling market, it's even more difficult to unplug machines and say, well, we're foreclosing all those ASICs and now we're going to sell them on the secondary market, right? So I think it's kind of a dynamic that you don't want to see. And even very sophisticated, smart companies that have, you know, entered the space have lost a ton of money or ended up sitting on a large fleet of miners, which they don't really know what to do with at the moment. So I think that's the learning for the industry. Of course, there's been a lot of leverage. There's been a lot of, I want to say, greed as well. Now miners are in survival modes. Also, the double dynamic of falling Bitcoin price and rising energy price was something that no one really had expected. But also is a good learning on how we can do things better, and also what motivated us in the first place to offer a solution like this.
Yeah, absolutely. I know I liked how you were transparent about, hey, like with this product, there's still obviously going to be counterparty risk with the actual miners themselves. But you kind of do take steps to mitigate that counterparty risk and be transparent. I guess like given what's going on with Silicon Valley Bank, Signature Bank, and Silvergate, how does Block Green ensure to like keep, you know, funds safe and kind of reduce or like be transparent about counterparty risk?
Yeah. So I think that there's two questions. Of course, the counterparty risk is on the actual recipient of the liquidity, which in that case is the miner. The miner needs to post on-chain collateral and off-chain collateral. Typically, we look more at the electrical equipment and not the mining equipment. We see that equipment as being also more stable in price and less subject to variations like we've seen in the past. Now, there is always a counterparty risk, and you know, also force majeure events like curtailments or a storm that stops the facility. So these are things that we cover contractually. So we have a contract that links the buyer and the seller. That is a revenue financing contract where we also talk about the collateral side of things. Now, when it comes to the actual funds, so the Bitcoin funds, we don't take custody of the funds. So as a user of Block Green, you come in with either a wallet that is in custody of a third party, like BitGo, for example, in our case, or you can use your own self-custody solution as well. So you send the hash rate, the Bitcoin to the miner receives it, and then the rewards are paid back directly to your wallet. We are just providing the infrastructure for this to happen, but we don't control the funds. And that's something that is very important to us, even before the big crashes and FTX story. We always thought that from, you know, our perspective, also our role, it's more important that we provide the infrastructure but don't manage actively funds.
Nice. Yeah, very cool. So I guess if a public company that mines Bitcoin or a large private company that mines Bitcoin is interested in something like this product, is this available right now, or is it coming out sometime in the future?
Yeah, we are doing our first trades at the moment. We have a bit of hash rate ourselves, so we are testing that with our own hash rate. We will be doing a larger pool, as we call it, or SynHash is actually the right name for synthetic hash rate, in April with one large public miner. The official launch date is end of this quarter, so around last week of March and a couple of days, and in early April.
Nice. Are you able to disclose who the miner is, or even like how much hash rate is, you know, on your platform?
For now, we cannot disclose names, but I can say that the trade will be between 100 and 150 Bitcoin.
Nice. Very cool. It's exciting. Yeah, I love how you guys are Bitcoin focused company. I think that's awesome. I kind of want to dive into the energy industry and the mining industry, like very big picture. I guess, how deeply do you think the energy industry connects with the Bitcoin mining industry? And do you think that these industries will connect even closer and closer as time goes on?
Yeah, I think that they're deeply connected, obviously, and even more so when you look at the dynamic that has been happening globally. In the US is a good example, but I think it's true everywhere, where companies realize that actually Bitcoin mining is an energy play. It's a commodity, but it's an energy play. We've been also very interested about some of the developments in terms of energy companies entering the mining space, so starting, you know, mining JVs with nuclear plants or directly self-mining. We've seen this with companies like TEPCO in Japan, firms also in the Middle East, in the US, a strong interest from the oil and gas industry around flaring. So that's, I think that dynamic is one of the most interesting aspect of what Bitcoin mining can do to the energy market and to the grid. And we see this as a big development in the coming years, not just as the possibility to monetize existing energy sources, but also to create new ones, right? So typically, we looked a lot at methane flaring. There's great companies in the US looking at this problem. And we think that this dynamic will develop also on a global scale.
Foundation is one of my favorite Bitcoin companies. Their product, Passport, is one of the best Bitcoin hardware wallets on the market. It is air-gapped and highly secure. I strongly encourage you to go to foundationdevices.com and use the code BLOCKWARE and get $10 off your Passport. It's a great way to easily and securely store the private keys to your Bitcoin. Yeah, very cool. Yeah, I mean, I've definitely seen the news with TEPCO Mining and a lot of other U.S. energy companies, jumping or dipping their toe, at least, into the Bitcoin mining industry. But I definitely, from like what I've seen, it's more of like the total network hash rate is more companies, or at least public miner hash rate is more like focused companies exclusively on Bitcoin mining. I guess, do you think we're going to see, I think you agree that the trend of energy companies diving into the Bitcoin mining space is going to, you know, continue to be the case. But with Bitcoin mining companies like exclusively working on that, do you think that maybe Bitcoin mining has the potential to get so big that maybe mining companies get more into the energy industry? And like, yeah, which way, I guess, do you see it coming from in the long term or over the next 5 to 10 years? Do you see energy industry coming into the mining space, or do you see more of the mining space coming into the energy space, or do you see both equal?
I think I cannot really give the ratio. I think naturally, of course, pure play Bitcoin miners understand the industry, they understand their product very well. So naturally, they will be more inclined to do more of it, right? But they also realize that this is a very cyclical business. There's a lot of volatility, and it's important to look at ways to also stabilize and have different revenue streams. And energy here, or building energy assets, comes quite naturally. Being able to build different lines of product around mining makes a lot of sense. And this is something that I expect will happen more and more. In terms of energy companies entering the mining space, if it's really building a large fleet and becoming, you know, a large miner, I think it will depend on the actual possibilities that they have. Existing energy companies typically, I think, see mining as a way to increase the utilization rates of their assets and monetize more, maybe build more assets as well down the line. But I don't expect them to become, you know, the largest mining players out there. So it will be, a trend of the two sides. What I think is very interesting here is that you can also think around, well, what else can you do when you have energy and kind of data centers? And we've seen miners also looking at other use cases around the capacity of selling a service like a data center for AI networks, for other high computing requirements. And that's something that we're also quite interested in.
Yeah, I mean, I think you brought up a really interesting point about like how Bitcoin's volatility is tough, so it makes a lot of sense for these miners to have financing solutions like what you guys are building at Blockgreen, and then also just being conservative with cash flow. I guess I could see miners like I envision like CleanSpark being like a good model where during the bull run they were more conservative building out mining infrastructure, and then during the bear market they were buying all of the cheap mining rigs. Obviously that paid off pretty well. They executed that strategy pretty well. I could see in the future where, you know, a company like CleanSpark or others, they during the bull run they used Blockgreen to finance or to get capital out of their mining infrastructure, and then use that to either build power plants or even use it to build more mining infrastructure. I guess, do you see that being a potential use case for something like this?
Absolutely. I think the working capital part is very appealing to miners. Typically, something that we've discussed a lot of with some of the large miners out there, and also a way for them to quickly deploy more assets when it's actually interesting to do so, whether it's because the assets have decreased in price or there's an opportunity they need to secure. They need some working capital and they can access it in a way that makes a lot of sense. I think another aspect here is also for those large miners, either private or public, or looking to go public, is to say, well, with a solution like that, we're able to have more stable financials. Yes, we leave a bit of potential upside on the table because there is a kind of cost of capital, but at the same time, we're able to show that year on year, our revenues are, you know, looking more stable than the typical miner that has kind of this, you know, cyclical revenue outlook, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, from talking to other people in the space and outside the Bitcoin mining space, I think it makes a lot of sense to look at Bitcoin mining as like a commodity, like you're mining a commodity, and like pretty much every commodity producer that's of any size like hedges in some way of like the actual price of the commodity. And like Bitcoin mining was the one industry where during the bull market, almost everyone was doing the opposite of hedging. They were like leverage longing Bitcoin. So it's kind of fascinating to see like how the industry has shifted. And it seems like it's going to be more about, at least for the larger players, being conservative and surviving the bear markets, and then, you know, still doing well during the bull markets, but not like putting it all in on the bull markets and leverage longing, and hopefully it works out.
Sure. I mean, if you're a long only fund and you're only on Bitcoin, you might be able to amass a lot of Bitcoin during the bull run, but then if you have to sell 90% of it during the bear markets, it's not necessarily the strategy I would go for, right? So I think this realization is coming to more and more miners out there. For us, being now, building this product for over a year, I can tell you that the conversations that I've had in the beginning are very different to the ones we have now. And I think people came to realize that it's, you know, important to hedge. It's important to be intelligent about the treasury management. It's important to also look at ways to diversify risk. And that's probably a difficult learning for some miners, but definitely something that we experience more and more.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess like kind of going into the next bull run, whenever that does occur at a very large scale, do you think miners learn their lesson? Like, do you think I definitely think some are going to hedge, but do you think, you know, there's still going to be that batch of miners that's like, you know what, we're going all in on Bitcoin. Like, we're going to like raise a bunch of money. We're going to raise a bunch of equity, borrow as much as possible, and just kind of get ultra long. And probably if Bitcoin has a volatile downside move again, you know, years in the future, which seems like it eventually probably will to me, then will they get wrecked again? Like, will some people just not learn the lesson of the past?
It's difficult to tell. I think the capital markets will have learned some lesson. I think investors became hopefully a bit more intelligent about the industry, especially the ones that have, you know, been investing and are interested to invest more in the space. I think the level of concentration that we will see after the end of this bear market will be higher than previously. There is not so much, at least in North America, and it's also true for Europe, not so much more space to do mining. So the expansion will probably be looking to go to like South America, the Middle East, and here we have, I think, different dynamics. But for sure, what I expect will happen in the case of our product is that, well, right now, you know, you can get attractive return by providing liquidity to miners. It's still much cheaper in terms of cost of capital than taking on debt. Now, if miners are going all in on Bitcoin and are willing to pay 25% on some dollar solution or fiat-denominated solution. Typically, well, I would expect that's the case when Bitcoin goes through the roof. And so on our platform, Bitcoin holders would probably be willing to accept a lower return in order to deploy their Bitcoin. And so the kind of market mechanism will make the cost of capital adapt as well on the BTC-denominated solutions, probably going, you know, way below the cost of fiat-denominated ones. So that's the dynamic I expect. Now, will all miners learn the lessons? I think there will be new miners out there. There will be people that, you know, are still acting in ways that I don't see as very sustainable. And that's kind of part of every market, right?
Definitely. Your team recently published a really interesting report. It was titled Energy Strategy and Planning for North American Bitcoin Miners. There are a lot of cool charts in it. I posted some of them on Twitter and shared some of the ones that you guys posted. Can you dive into some of the highlights that you guys found in this report?
Yeah, absolutely. So for us, we are, you know, very interested to understand our market better every day. One core aspect of this research was to say, well, we're going to look at the largest market for now, North America, and try to understand a bit the trends around energy and mining. I think it's important for both our future users, but also for the space to have this perspective. And for this first research, we wanted to look at the different states, understand a bit the dynamic, and how this impacted our industry over the last 18 to 24 months. And so I think the key findings that we have here are mostly around, well, there is actually a lot of concentration, obviously. Well, that was pretty well known, but we wanted to point that out and really look at the exact dynamic behind that. And also, how are miners kind of positioning their strategy when it comes to the different states, and what would be the future showing when it comes to, for example, changing regulation and things like that. So it's a long report, but it's, I think, covering most of the dynamic on that front in the U.S.
Yeah, definitely. We'll definitely put a link to it in the show notes. Like I said, there are some cool graphics for people to look at that kind of highlighted, you know, what's going on in the North American Bitcoin mining space. Thought it was awesome. Last question, then we can go ahead and wrap it up. I guess, what do you think the future of Bitcoin and finance is long term? Like, do you think that people will be, you know, always looking for, I guess, dollar-denominated returns? And I know you're talking about Bitcoin-denominated returns as well. Like, how do you think that plays out, you know, 10, 20, 30 years from now?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think that, so for us, the dynamic that we see is that, and that we believe in, is that Bitcoin will actually take over a lot of monetary systems and replace, at least in some cases, completely fiat. Now, will this happen in the next 2-3 years? No, we don't think so. It takes time. But definitely the role of Bitcoin will be understood better and applied more and more. For countries like, you know, where I'm from, Switzerland or the US, maybe this comes as like a long shot, because we still have a relatively stable financial ecosystem and economies. I think this will happen and is already happening more and more in countries where this is not the case. And now, as this, you know, this market will destabilize more and more, and that's something we've seen in the recent weeks, and we'll see more and more, I think, in the years to come. The role of this, you know, decentralized solution that is completely not in the hands of one country, but also able to settle quickly, transparently, will become more and more important and more visible to a larger group of people and institutions. So for us, our role is to kind of start building applications where people can invest, also get access to interesting solutions like the ones that we are first offering with mining, on top of their Bitcoin holdings, to also show that you can do more than just holding your Bitcoin on a wallet and doing nothing with it. And I think more and more of these applications will also drive the adoption of Bitcoin globally.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how it plays out over the long run. I definitely agree that, you know, some of the weaker fiat currencies may not have much time left. But when it comes to something like the US dollar, I could see it lasting a significant amount of time. One thought that I've kind of had recently is, and this is how I've been thinking about, I guess, Bitcoin for a while, but now I have kind of a way to say it, is like the dollar is kind of a short-term unit of account where it's like you need, you know, you have liabilities that you need to meet within the next, you know, 1 to 2 years, whereas Bitcoin is kind of a longer-term unit of account where it's like, okay, I need to be outperforming Bitcoin over the next 5 to 10 years for this to make sense. Do you agree with that idea or have any other thoughts?
Yeah, I think on large fiat like the dollar, it's also true for like the Swiss franc. In my case, we basically are using and betting on the fact that the future of our society will provide the economical output to sustain what we're actually doing today and what the state is doing today. So yes, those short-term liabilities, I would tend to agree, as long as people are willing to kind of accept that this is a bet on what the future society will do and look like, and also what decisions will be made in, you know, the years to come by the government in terms of monetary policy, in terms of spending, in terms of taxation. So all of that is kind of a general belief in a few or a small group of individuals, which you completely remove with Bitcoin, right? And I think that is also the strength of Bitcoin when you look, if I were to kind of build an asset or build wealth going forward, where would I want this, or who would I want in charge of this wealth? And I think the answer is no one.
Yeah, I love it. It's awesome. Great spot to end it on. Seb, where can people learn more about you and Block Green?
Yeah, so on block.green, our website. We also have a newsletter, which I'm happy to share for the show notes, that we are releasing on a weekly basis. And of course, Noster or Twitter.